Hey everyone, and thank you for joining us today at I-80 Sports. Season preview time. Today we're talking the Colorado Rapids. By now you should know what we're up to. We're bringing in people who are going to talk about every team in Major League Soccer. Today we are joined by Matt Pollard from Holding the High Line. Matt, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the work you do?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on the show. My name is Matt Pollard. I am one of the co-hosts of Holding the High Line, the independent Colorado Rapids podcast. You can find us at Rapids 96 Podcast or wherever you're looking for your podcast. Just search us or Holding the High Line. And then I'm also the site manager for Last Word on Soccer. We mostly cover MLS, but everything in the CONCACAF North American space as well.
Awesome, and thank you for taking the time to join us here. And if you're new to I-80 Sports, make sure you hit that subscribe button. You can find us, i80sports.com, at every major podcast outlet. Just type in I-80 Sports and we'll take you there. Also, most of you are watching this on YouTube, youtube.com/i80sports. So let's get right into it. Let's talk about Colorado Rapids, and we're going to talk about their ownership, their stadium, their history, their culture. Matt, let us know what we need to know.
Sure. So the Colorado Rapids, I guess, since this could be fans who are new to MLS or fans of MLS teams that are not MLS originals, the Colorado Rapids are an MLS original going back to 1996. They were originally owned by Phil Anschutz, the owner of the LA Galaxy. Now, there's a fun little story I can tell you about how if it wasn't for Marcelo Balboa, the Rapids might not actually exist. In the early 2000s, they were bought by Stan Kroenke, and that started the transition out from them being like one of many MLS original teams that started out in an NFL stadium. The Rapids, prior to Dick's Sporting Goods Park out in Commerce City, Colorado, played at Old Mile High Stadium. They did not play at New Mile High Stadium. So orange seats, generic bowl, not the wavy blue that we now have of the New Mile High Stadium. So they were there until 2007 when DSG opened up. 2010 MLS Cup champions, as we have, obviously, I don't know how well you can see on my jersey, but the star is there, I promise. And then, you know, now they are under, they're still under infamously Silent Stan, Uncle Stan. Porrick Smith is the technical director. Robin Fraser will be coming into his second full season as Rapids manager, his third as he took over in August of 2019. Young, exciting team. They don't spend a whole lot of money, but they're one of the few MLS teams that I think is now starting to reap the rewards of what they've put into the fully funded academy system. And it's relative to the last several years, it's been a good time to be somebody wearing Rapids burgundy and blue.
Absolutely. So let's transition right into it. Last season, Colorado 8-6-4. They scored 32 times, conceding 28 goals. They were the fifth playoff team. They got 28 points over the course of last season. You had Cole Bassett, 5 goals, 5 assists. Jonathan Lewis, 5 goals. That is in 7 starts and 11 substitutions. Andre Shinyashiki, 4 goals, 1 assist. Diego Rubio, 3 goals, 4 assists. You had Kai Kamara, 3 goals and 1 assist. Yunus Nnamdi, 2 goals, 4 assists. And Sam Vines, 1 goal and 3 assists. Now, I'm going to throw this over to you, Matt. If there's one kind of overarching thought or theme of the 2020 season, what would that be?
Thriving in the face of chaos. The Rapids started off the season with 2 wins against teams that I would have picked to make the playoffs in MLS. They opened up with the first actual game. They had it was an 11 a.m. kickoff here, 1 p.m. Eastern against DC United. Jonathan Lewis, who you just mentioned, scored the winner in stoppage time in that one. And then they scored in stoppage time as well off of a corner. Drew Moore in the home opener. As we all know, the season shut down and, you know, the world came to a stop, you know, this time last year, or I guess it would have been about 13 months ago now, since we're talking on April 3rd, 2021. And we kind of waited to see what was going to happen. The Rapids were one of the dark horses, one of the, you know, favorites of, you know, could they shake things up, you know, be a bracket buster, to use a March Madness analogy, in the MLS's back tournament. And they crashed out of that spectacularly. And similarly, they started off very, very slowly. Once the season started back in phase two, they started around in a form. They got 2 back-to-back wins before a COVID outbreak within the organization shut down the team for the better part of a month. They went a full calendar month without playing any games. 5 of those games, as you mentioned, ended up being canceled. And, you know, the Rapids ended up with the Western Conference. They decided to do the table based on points per game rather than point totals. a lot of LA Galaxy fans won't like it. And me saying that even if you were to go by that, the Rapids still would have made the playoffs. They would have been seventh instead of fifth. And really, it came down to them buckling down. I think Robin Fraser did a really good job of keeping the group together, of keeping them organized and keeping them focused and doing what they could, where they were with what they had. In some cases, that included only having 8 to 11 guys who were available for practice when the COVID outbreak happened. And with contact tracing, they couldn't even field the first 11. They were playing basically, 4v4 with a goalkeeper sometimes. And they managed it, I think, extremely well. And it was just a matter of what they were going to do once they got back to playing, got smashed by Sporting Kansas City in that first game back by a score of 5-0. It was a late own goal from Lalas Abubakar against Minnesota United that following Wednesday. And then they had two games against Cascadia teams. And so was it the work that they were doing in that month that they had off, them grinding out, them finding a way to play ugly and get a result? Were they going to be able to get it? They beat Seattle Sounders in probably the most impressive victory that they had of the season, 3-1 at home. Kellen Acosta scores to guarantee them into the playoffs, and they were riding into the playoffs on a high. 3 wins after those 2 losses, they'd gotten back into form, and they lose to Minnesota United. And if you've seen the first Elevate video of 2021, I see a lot of parallels between 2019 Minnesota United finally getting back to the playoffs and then just not having enough experience in those crunch time moments. They lost that home playoff game against the LA Galaxy when the Galaxy still had Zlatan. And a lot of the naivete and the inexperience of the Rapids showed in that 3-0 loss to Minnesota. And now it's about, can they get back to the playoffs? Can they grow from those experiences? And can they be better for it in a normal 2021?
Absolutely. Now, I've been on this team for probably the last 3 seasons, and I always been saying, this is the time Colorado becomes a real team. And I feel like finally in 2020, they became that team. And it was on the back of a lot of young players. So for me, kind of the theme of the season was just finally the experienced veterans and the young up-and-comers kind of finally meshed and put a team on the field that was able to win some games.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it definitely came together. We saw the arrival of Cole Bassett. I think we also saw the arrival of Kellen Acosta in a role that was, I think, different from what FC Dallas fans would have wanted from him when he was a homegrown there, different from what I think the club hyped and thought Kellen Acosta was going to be when he was acquired halfway through the 2018 season. But it's a role that suits him really well, that he's really, really good at playing. And as we've seen in the last couple of months, is a role that he can fill in at times for the national team. And I do think he will have something to say about the upcoming World Cup qualification process in the summer as well from a national team standpoint, sans the Olympics, obviously.
I could talk about Kellen Acosta all day long, and we will get there. We will have time.
Bob's a big fan.
That's not a negative. I might be the one person with a mic in front of his face that doesn't have something bad to say about Kellen Acosta.
Okay, I'd like to officially welcome you to the Kellen Acosta hive. It's going to be a good year, hopefully. But, I think a lot of things came to fruition from a tactical standpoint of what Robin Fraser wanted. I think the club finally got good on some of their transfer policies and what they were doing, going back to getting Jonathan Lewis and Lalas Abubakar at the end of the primary transfer window in 2018. And I think just the club from the top down, from Porik Smith to Robin Fraser, they've appointed good people. Those good people have had time to do good things, and everybody's making good decisions. And at the risk of making a really bad analogy here, everybody's rowing in the same direction, and they're going in a good direction.
I love how you guys stole John DeLewis from New York City. I mean, that was just what a trade that was. We me and Bob were talking about, when you guys made that trade, I was like, what is New York City thinking? I mean, we couldn't believe you got him. It was like they just gave him away almost to you. It was crazy.
I wouldn't say that they gave him away. I mean, it was $950,000 in allocation money. That's the biggest, off the top of my head, that's the biggest inter-league acquisition the Rapids ever make, and one of the bigger ones.
He's worth it. He's definitely he's worth it more. If you would sell him now, you could get more money. If you would trade him within the league, you would get that money back plus easily.
Absolutely. And yeah, I do think that Kellen Acosta, who just signed a new deal at the end of last season, I do not think he will see out that time for the Colorado Rapids. And it's going to be a multiple X profit on that. And as my co-host Mark Goodman likes to say, allocation money has never scored a goal, made a pass, or made an assist. And Jonathan Lewis has done a lot of those things with the Colorado Rapids.
Well, it's a cool million amongst friends, am I right? Okay, let's talk a little bit about the coach and the tactics, Coach Robin Fraser. If I was watching Colorado for the first time, what would I see on the field?
You would see them in, I'd say their base formation is probably in a 4-3-3 out of possession. They really, really like to press. I would say it's very, very fluid. At the times I was describing last year, they playing, it's almost like freeform jazz, to where it's definitely a back four, unless they're in position and Sam Vines is bombing down the field. We can get to that when we get to that, you know, but other than that, for the most part, it's a four and then whatever, often with Jack Price at the number six role, but there's a lot of fluidity in there, you know. Diego Rubio is a false nine. The wingers are going to tuck in. The wide midfielders are going to go out. It is all about mobility. It is all about high energy. And it's a tactic that works really well when you can glean down a team into playing that high energy style at altitude against an opponent who is not conditioned to that. And obviously, when you go on the road, with the exceptions of some of the games that they had on turf last year, they're going to be even more high energy from that. When the opponent moves the ball forward, they're comfortable in flattening that out a little bit. They don't necessarily press and they wait for the opponents to make mistakes. Everything that Robin Fraser is trying to do, that they're doing in different phases, is about creating transition moments. This is a team that is comfortable and likes being on the counterattack. They like finding space for their wide attacking players, and ultimately that either creates relatively tapping goals or that forces somebody to commit a foul. And then obviously Jack Price is on the ball. You put the center backs in and it's all chaos from there, as the team that I will expect from a third year in a row will be the set piece kings of Major League Soccer.
Well, love it. So I'm going to jump in and throw up a depth chart, and I'm not someone in the know. This is just kind of using historical data and kind of projecting forward. Tell us where maybe we're wrong, and then we'll break down each position one by one. Okay, so this is what I brought up. Up top, Diego Rubio, and I have Shinichiki behind him. What would you have to say about the strikers for the 2021 season?
I think we're going to see, I think a depth chart other than Diego Rubio probably starting over Andre Shinichiki. He does have a little bit of a knock in preseason, so fantasy owners, I wouldn't count on Diego Rubio necessarily starting that game against FC Dallas on April 17th. Yunus Nnamdi is a good shout to be on the right, but if I'm being honest with you, Bob, after that, I think it's a mixed bag. The wide positions are the positions that Robin Fraser has liked to sub out and rotate the most. It is the position where he has the most depth in there. I question whether or not Jonathan Lewis is going to be a starter for most of the season. And then also Nicolas Benezé can play at the number nine role as well. I'm surprised you don't have Michael Barrios on there, who I would expect to at least initially start the season on the left.
All right. So yeah, that's the first one. Jonathan Lewis has been a sub in the past, but I he's just so good. You got to find a way to get him in the game for me. So maybe that's why, maybe it was just wishful thinking putting him there.
It is wishful thinking. I don't think you're wrong in the wishful thinkingness of that. I guess what I would point to is just, you know, even last season where he was playing well and starting, you can see it if you go back and you look at the pull up like MLSsoccer.com or one of the YouTube highlights of like the 4 to 6 minute highlights of the playoff game that you have against Minnesota. 5 or 6 minutes into the game, Johnny gets the first really good opportunity. He kind of slips space, and then I think Cole Bassett plays him through, and he's basically 1v1 with St. Clair, and he ends up missing that opportunity, and he just slumps after that. And so I think, unfortunately for Jonathan Lewis, and I've asked him about this in the media, you know, he's tried to come up with ideas with what he's doing wrong. I think it's mostly up here mentally for him. He phases in and out of games when he starts. He doesn't come on necessarily and start games with that killer instinct. And as soon as something goes wrong, you could see it, whether or not he was thinking it, but his body language said, wow, that was a golden opportunity. I totally missed it. And he phases out through the rest of the half, and he subbed either at halftime, maybe the 50th minute for Nicolas Benezé, I believe, in that playoff game. And so we see that when he comes on and he's playing for 30 or 20 minutes at the end of a game and the Rapids are chasing the game, or it's a tie game and they're looking to go up. We see opportunities and that creativeness and him using his speed and using it intelligently to start games. He hasn't necessarily finished, and when things don't go well, he phases out of games, and he hasn't been a 90-minute player for the Colorado Rapids, and I would argue that was best illustrated in the two opportunities he had in the final 20 minutes of the game against Honduras, the other week, that it's still, it's just, it's not fully there. And for those reasons, I still think his best role for the Rapids right now is a super sub. And to be fair, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing if he's just doing that. And that is what he's going to be for the national team if those opportunities present themselves. But I want Jonathan Lewis to succeed. I think it's all there for him. I think the door is wide open, even with the Olympic failure, for him to get into the World Cup qualifiers. We need to see him arrive in the same way that Cole Bassett and Kellen Acosta arrived last year.
All right. So let's talk about that right wing position, because, Younes Nnamdi is a player who has impressed the heck out of me, but over, I think he played almost like 14 full games last season. 2 goals, 3 assists to show for it. Does he have room to grow into a better position there?
Absolutely.
You beat me to the punch there. I was going to just bring him up. I wanted to talk about Nnamdi. I think he's very underrated. His skill set, to me, he's not talked about much, nonetheless. I know he needs to play more, but I want to hear what you have to say about Nnamdi. To me, his skill set looks amazing, and the sky's the limit for this guy.
I don't know if the sky's the limit for him. I think relative is the only official designated player for the Colorado Rapids. And I haven't been able to confirm this, but I have heard with a source close to the situation, he was the only player who base salary before shenanigans with the CBA was scheduled to make over $1 million last year for the Rapids. Kellen Acosta, I think, is on 900 with TAM, and we don't yet know the full extent of the details with Jack Price signing a new deal last year. But, you know, Nnamdi was brought in to be that key creative piece that they have. Obviously, you see the techers and everything that he's doing on the ball. He loves to break ankles. He's not necessarily somebody who finds space, but he isn't necessarily someone who needs space. So similarly, how the, you know, going back to Robin Fraser's style, the Rapids are almost cockeyed when you think about them going forward, because Sam Bynes is going to go forward on the left more so than Keegan Rosenberry. And then Jonathan Lewis, whoever they have on that left wing role, is definitely, I'm going to try and find space. I'm going to try and run into space. Now I'm looking at the ball with the opposing outside back, you know, 5 yards, 5 feet from him, and still find a way around him. He's created a lot of chances that didn't necessarily lead to a lot of goals last year. And part of that comes down just the fact that, you know, the one main complaint everybody has about Diego Rubio is he only scored 3 goals as the number 9 last year. He was a 10-digit goal scorer in a normal season last year, and there's no more Kai Kamara. So I think there's lots of chance creation in the front three, regardless of who's up there. Nnamdi is going to be a big part of that. I think Jonathan Lewis, if he figures it out, he'll be a part of that. Michael Barrios certainly will be the left-sided foil to Younes Nnamdi. I think the question is, they're going to create a lot of those chances. Who are those chances going to, and who's going to score, given Cole Bassett was the best goal scorer for the Rapids last year with just 5 goals?
Absolutely. Let's jump into Cole Bassett in this midfield. Now, my strategy for setting up this depth chart was get as many midfielders on the sheet of paper as possible, and that's about as much thought as I put into it. Now, I have Jack Price playing defensive midfield. Bassett's all over the place. Kellen Acosta, we've seen what he's done with the national team. But you got Mayaka, you got Mosqueda. How do you see them playing, and where in the position in the midfield are each of these guys?
Yeah, I'd agree with you completely. I guess the only thing that I would say, since, you know, this is a depth chart, Bob, and you don't have a depth option, is I would put Colin Warner as the main number 6 option there for Jack Price. But I would expect Jack Price to play 2,500 minutes easily from that one. You know, there is going to be some fixture congestion. The Rapids have 5 games in 16 days at the end of October, going from, I believe it's October 5th. That final day is Halloween, which they're playing a matinee game against Houston, and the following week is decision day. So we will see a little bit of Colin Warner. I cap his minutes at about 500 minutes, and I do think we'll see a lot more fluidity in terms of who's playing, just because of the national team implications that you might have with Cole Bassett and certainly with Kellen Acosta. But it's going to be those three. It was those three through the bulk of the season. If they're all completely healthy, I would expect Kellen Acosta isn't called up for the Gold Cup and Nations League and multiple World Cup qualifiers for the international windows. I would expect all of them to play 2,000 minutes. Cole Bassett is a number 10-ish style 8. I would say Kellen Acosta is a 6-ish style 8. Jack Price, obviously, being more the regista out there, is the only pure number 8. When we talk to the players and when I've heard from Robin, he says my midfield is a number 6 and 2 8s, and then one being slightly more aggressive, and then one being slightly more one being slightly more conservative. And that kind of fits in with what we saw from Kellen Acosta with the national team the 2 times that he's played recently. You know, you don't necessarily, it's not, oh wow, look at what Kellen Acosta just did. It's just, you know, let me get the ball in a little bit of tight space after Jack Price makes a tackle, and then let me make a really simple play. You know, you pull up his highlight reel of every single thing that he does for maybe you know, 5 or 6 minutes out of the 90 minutes. And it's, wow, that was a really good play that he made look really simple, that wasn't a big part in terms of deciding the game, but made things a lot easier for the Colorado Rapids. So I would say Kellen Acosta is he's the tempo center. Jack Price is the anchor at the back, and then Cole Bassett is the creative, and they work in tandem, and it works really, really well. And when those guys are clicking, when the Rapids are winning in the midfield, is when they've been able to punch up above their weight.
Love it. Now, the fullback is another position of strength for me for the Colorado Rapids. Sam Vines looked very good at times for the men's national team, certainly with his crossing, get moving up and down the field. On the other side, you have Keegan Rosenberry, an MLS veteran who I think plays solid at that position. You have Betashore on there somewhere too. Let's talk about fullbacks.
I think the Rapids have certainly in the Western Conference, I'd say they have a top four fullback combination that you have. Sam Vines, we talked about with the national team. He didn't arrive in the same way that Cole Bassett and Kellen Acosta did last year for the Rapids. We knew about his defensive prowess, but it was the final third, the offensive side, that he hadn't really unlocked. He had created chances and he had gotten forward, but he hadn't always made the right decision. He hadn't always executed when he had made the right decision. And that really came together really well for him. Kind of, this is going to sound crazy and super ironic, but I think when the Rapids didn't have a game to play, you know, as I talked about during the COVID scare, Sam Bynes, to my knowledge, wasn't one of the players who was affected there. He basically just had a month to train on, what am I going to do when I get forward? Do I take it to the outside and then cross small in? Or do I cut inside and then make a pass to the top of the box to zone 14? And he basically just had a month straight to work on that. And something about that clicked for him in ways that he came back better. And he basically just rolled that forward into the January camp of the national team and was one of the better. I don't know how much he could have affected things. You know, Sam Vines wasn't the center forward. He's not scoring the goals for the U23 team, but he was one of the few players who I think still in hindsight of the failure actually still looked good. So he rolled forward with that. You know, he's a super dynamic player when he does get forward. He just had to unlock that. And then Keegan Rosenberry on the same side can do that, but is certainly comfortable being the more conservative fullback that you have. And he's never sick at sea. He missed two games last year. Both were because of COVID protocol. Prior to that, back-to-back years, both his first year with the Rapids and then his last year with the Philadelphia Union was an MLS Ironman. All 34 games played, all started, all 90 minutes. So the Rapids are in good hands there. I do have some concerns about what happens if Keegan Rosenberry goes down, or with the fixture congestion, what do the Rapids do from that standpoint? Because Jeremy Kelly, who backed up Keegan last year, he is on loan with Phoenix Rising. And then Sebastian Anderson, the homegrown, he is now on loan with the Colorado Springs Switchback. So I'm concerned, you know, I similar to you, Bob, I would not have a de facto backup right back behind Keegan Rosenberry because I'm not sure who that person is right now. And then I also kind of wonder if Sam Vines hits kind of all the triggers to max out his national team opportunities for the Rapids in 2021. You know, Steven Betashore didn't play a game last year. That doesn't mean that he can't play, but you know, if Sam Vines is gone for 2 months because of the Gold Cup and then another month basically for World Cup qualifiers, I'm not sure Steven Betashore brings what Sam Vines would have brought. And can Keegan Rosenberry elevate his game to make up that difference is not a doubt I have, but certainly a curiosity.
Absolutely. And one of the things I like about this whole left side for the team with Jonathan Lewis and Sam Vines, if you watch the U.S. men's national team, there's a lot of overlapping that happens when your fullback gets upfield. They just seem like they were always on the same page and playing with each other, not only the men's national team, but for the Colorado Rapids. I think they're going to bring a lot of heat down that left side this season.
Absolutely. Sam Vines had his best attacking games last year for the Rapids when Jonathan Lewis was in front of him and they were combining or at the very least creating space. Cause as soon as, you know, if Sam Vines gets the ball out in space and then he moves forward and then they're able to, you know, 2v1 the opposing fullback. Well, okay, you take the guy with the ball and now Jonathan Lewis has a bunch of space and, you know, you could find him in that space. If you take Jonathan Lewis, you know, then Sam Vines has now figured out how to cross. Yeah. Not that the Rapids have necessarily had great headers in the box to necessarily deal with that. But, you know, again, the Rapids are at their best in transition. Those are two players who, from an attacking standpoint, are at their best in transition. And when they're together, they're, I could name three right backs in Major League Soccer who could deal with that five times a game and, you know, not be in a fire drill situation.
Absolutely. And when we go to the center backs, it gets good. I mean, I think this is a solid group. We talked about they gave up 28 goals last season. You got Austin Trusty, Abubakar, and you got Moore. How do you see these three breaking down? Do you have any favorite pairing out of those two, out of those three?
I'd start off by saying that you've missed Danny Wilson. I would say I'm a reformed member of Danny Wilson Island, who is one of the much maligned players in the Anthony Hudson era of the Colorado Rapids. Danny Wilson and Lalas Abubakar were the favorite center back pairing that you had for the Colorado Rapids last year. Danny's more of an organizer. I'd say he's him along with more probably the best passers out of the back. Lalas Abubakar more of the takes cares of balls. You know, he's a physical player. He can deal with balls in the air. And I'd say he's the most CONCACAF-y of the members of the Colorado Rapids, which is super fun to watch when he's doing really, really well. Also a bit of a yellow card machine, which is a concern there. But I would say right now for me, I would probably have Danny Wilson and Lalas Abubakar starting together. After that, I think Drew Moore is probably the only center back who's going to regularly come off the bench. Robin doesn't like to sub out his center backs. And I also think, do we know whether or not MLS is going back to just three subs for the year? But if it's not going to be five subs,
I don't think an announcement's been made.
I think I heard three, but I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
Okay,
I think five is done. I could be wrong, but I think it's done.
Okay, well, unless there are going to be five substitutions, then I wouldn't count on Robin or many MLS coaches subbing out their center backs. So I think if that is an option, if they want to go three at the back, I think Drew Moore would be that option. I think similar to you, Bob, putting Jonathan Lewis up there at left wing back, or left wing, excuse me, I think putting Trusty in there as the left center back is similar kind of wishful, hopeful thinking, because I think if there was another player who was more disappointing in terms of their potential and coming into the Rapids, it was Austin Trusty last year. Didn't really work out in training. He couldn't really find a way to get into games. And when he subbed in, he wasn't super good. He just didn't get a good run of games. I think he played less than 500 minutes last year. And every single time the lineup graphic would come out, Rapids fans were kind of thinking, well, where's Austin Trusty? Why isn't he playing? What's going on in training to the point where he's, you know, not really playing regularly? And he wasn't as good as Danny Wilson. He wasn't as good as Lalas Abubakar. He wasn't as good as Drew Moore. And we kind of saw that with the fact that, you know, I think he was brought in as an option at center back for the U20 national team, but he got added to that. And I'm like, okay, he'll get some training opportunities. He'll get some exposure, you know, with the national team coaches and some of their staff that they have around. But Austin Trusty was never making that 20 man squad unless all the other center backs get COVID, a bunch of them get injuries. You know, Justin Glad doesn't get released by RSL. Austin Trusty was never making that group. And I think similarly, he's coming in with a chip on his shoulder and ground to make up on the other center backs right now in
All right. And the position we haven't covered yet, goalie. We got William Yarbrough as the starter and Clint Irwin. Is that how you see it?
Yes, Clint Irwin. Yes, that is. Oh, I thought you were asking how to pronounce Clint's name, but yes, that's how I see it. William Yarbrough came in. He's a fantastic communicator. He's really good with the ball at his feet. I think both players have proven at the professional level they can be really, really good shot stoppers. I think that's a position that's going to be competitive. It's going to be one where, unlike other positions, I think if there's an injury or yellow card accumulation or fixture congestion, Clint Irwin will step in there and it'll be relatively seamless with the personnel. But I think definitely right now, from last year and from what we've seen in preseason and who's been playing in preseason, I think Yarbrough is the number one, but that is the position where there is going to be regular competition. That's something that Robin Fraser has stressed. And I think that's a position where no matter what's going on, I don't think there's going to be a lot of doubts. Where I think similarly, there's, you know, if Kellen Acosta is out for whatever reason, I think there's going to be a little bit of concern for the Colorado Rapids. Obviously, if Austin Trusty isn't winning a center back role, fans are going to have some questions. Yarbrough's in, great. Clint Irwin's in, also great.
Are there any players that we have not touched on yet that we should be talking about?
Players that we have, I mean, we didn't really talk about him a whole lot, but Philip Mayaka was part of the five-man group that just got loaned down to the Colorado Springs Switchbacks. I would expect him to start and play there regularly. I don't know how much of a role that he's going to have this season with the Olympics not happening for the U.S. men. I think that was the main national team opportunity that you had for Cole Bassett, so I don't think he misses a significant amount of the season, and I think he'd be in competition for Mosquito, or we've seen at times Nomley come into the midfield as well. But I think Mayaka he's one to check on every other month minimum in what have the Switchbacks tweeted about him. Is he back in with the Rapids from a training standpoint? Super big, awesome talent. Obviously was a really big surprise to fall the third in the draft from people who are very familiar with Clemson soccer, saying that he has, from a potential standpoint, he's the best player to come out of that program in recent years. So he's one to watch, not necessarily for this year. And I don't know how relevant he'll be to other people around the league, but certainly Courtney Ford, who missed the past two seasons with major knee injuries, he was a Rookie of the Year finalist in 2018. I think that was his rookie year. Really, really good story out of Greeley, Colorado. Was the heart and soul of DU soccer here. And I know a lot of people who are, if you're a Rapids fan and you're a Rapids season ticket holder, you go to at least one DU men's soccer game a year. He helped start up that program. He got them to the, he was on the team, but wasn't a big part. I think his rookie year when they made the tournament for the first time and then made the, I think not the, the Final Four, but the Elite Eight was the farthest that DU men's soccer had ever been. And he was the captain and the starting center back and everything. Major knee injuries. You know, his mom had cancer and she beat cancer while he was at DU, and like they had to fundraise, you know, start a GoFundMe in order for her to pay for that. He is, you know, the beating heart of what it means to be a member of the Colorado Rapids. He's an absolute fan favorite, completely done with knee injuries. He's been participating in preseason. He's fully available for selection. I don't know, given what we just talked about with the center back depth and all the options that he have, how much that he plays, but the first game back that there are fans at DSG and Courtney Ford steps in on the field and kicks a soccer ball is going to be a cathartic moment for everyone who cares about this club.
All right. Last question I have for you is, what needs to go right for Colorado Rapids to have a successful season in 2020?
They need to have consistent performances. They need to consistently play well. This is not a team that has a talisman, a match winner. You know, LAFC can have, could have games last year and in years past where they don't play well, but, you know, a couple good plays by Carlos Vela is able to get them a result. I could say similar things about the Seattle Sounders with Nico Lodero and with Raul Ruiz Diaz and Jordan Morris. Pray God that he ends up getting healthy. The Rapids don't have that guy. They don't have a player either on the defensive side or the attacking side that they can just hand the ball to every single time when nothing else is going well and say, hey, get us a goal, get us a result. This is a team that has to play well and has to give maximum effort in order for them to get results and punch above their weights when they are playing against teams where they have a talent deficit. And so if they're playing consistently well, if they're competing and consistently at high level, regardless of who's going in there, they will beat the teams that they're supposed to be, and they will occasionally upset the teams that are better than them. And if they do that, I think they'll reach their ceiling and they'll finally get a home game back at Dick's Sporting Goods Park later on this year.
I have a question before we end the show. Everyone knows, and if you follow MLS, you guys hate Rail Salt Lake.
Yes.
Tell us about this rivalry, why you guys hate each other so much.
Well, obviously it's the Rocky Mountain Cup, which was organically started by the supporters. I believe it was the Gang of Eight, the Gang of Nine. I can't remember, but effectively it was half Rapids fans from C38 and then half RSL fans and everything. And then there's been a couple big trades that have gone down both ways that the clubs have benefited from. Obviously the Mehdi Belushi trade for Kyle Beckerman, who would have been a fantastic transition over in the aftermath of Paolo Mascherini ending his career, that, you know, Rapids fans are still really, really salty about. And then both clubs have made major international deals as well. In the early days of MLS with international roster spots, the Colorado Rapids got a permanent international roster spot from Real Salt Lake. And then similarly, the Colorado Rapids traded away an international roster spot until I think 2028 for Sione Niasse, who was not a particularly good player for the Colorado Rapids. So if we just think about that, you know, in terms of the, you know, the Rapids have had RSLs, you know, have had one of their permanent international roster spots for 11 years now. And we saw the Rapids just traded an international roster spot for $250,000 allocation money to Atlanta United. Like, how much money would that necessarily be? So there's been some front office deals that have happened. There's been some major trade deals that have happened. There was an organic, you know, trophy that the fans chose to. This is the physical manifestation of what it means to, you know, compete with between our club and your club. And historically, RSL's been the better team. They've made more finals. They won an MLS Cup before the Colorado Rapids, despite being a expansion club. You know, I think they came in 2007, obviously won in 2009. The Rapids won theirs in 2010. But since then, RSL has been a consistent playoff team. The Colorado Rapids, up until really this year, have been consistently rebuilding, rotating out head coaches. And during that time, RSL has largely dominated the Rocky Mountain Cup. Last year, 5-0 for the Colorado Rapids was the first time they had ever won a game at Rio Tinto Stadium. It was just the second time they had scored more than two goals at the Rio Tinto, and it was their first time, I believe, in 5-6 years winning the Rocky Mountain Cup as well. So RSL comes in and they have, I would argue, a better stadium. They have historically been the better team. They have taken Rapids players and done better things with them, and they've been a more consistent playoff team, and they've beaten the Rapids. And now, you know, the shoe is on the other proverbial, the hiking boot is on the other proverbial shoe. And as you know, and the rivalry also exists on Twitter. When RSL saw the, you know, the Colorado Rapids new 14ers kit, the Class 5 kit, come out, and they said, imitation is the greatest form of flattery that mediocrity can give to greatness, because RSL had a topography-like kit. And the only time that RSL wore that was last year, or the only time they wore that against the Colorado Rapids was the 5-0 drubbing. So if greatness is doing it in a better way, actually having 14ers, as RSL's highest peak is in the 13,000s, and then going there and beating your team 5-0 to take back the trophy and actually making the playoffs is, you know, is, if that's the greatness that Colorado is topping up on, that I would say that the Rapids have done it better. And in that, like, I stoke the rivalry even further. Come at me, RSL fans. At LWS, yeah. Matt Pollard.
I love how you kept saying 5-0 win, 5-0 win. You said it about five times. And that was awesome. I love it.
So, all these fans that want to come at you now, let them know where to come at you and let us know what you're working on.
Yeah, so at LWS Matt Pollard for me on Twitter. Obviously, lastwordonsports.com/soccer for all of my Rapids and all of our other MLS coverage that we have. And an auditory forum, Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red, at Rapids96 Podcast on the socials.
Matt Pollard, guys, thank you for joining us. And thank you all for watching IED Sports.
Thanks, boys.